They didn't leave me much room for my notes. Rishus Mor Dasa, Mashkiach, and Rishus, my dearest friends. It's really an amazing, amazing schus. The hardest part of me is figuring out where to start. Because I feel that I really just want to show up and just say thank you, and like go around and say thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you to each person in this room for everything that you do for Klal Yisrael. And I feel like that would be, you know, kedai. That would be enough. Dayenu. Baruch Hashem, this is the seventh year now I've had the Swiss to come. And I hope that if I, you know, one day at a time, Baruch Hashem, I'll be roy to be part of this Sibur. But really, just to be here and to say thank you to you. And to be able to tell you how much Hakar Satov I have for you. How much Hakar Satov Klal Yisrael has for what you do. And to just really, Me'omek Alev, to say thank you for the unbelievable amount of Kochos HaGuf HaNefesh that you give every single day, every hour of the day, whether you're awake or you're asleep. What you do for the Jewish people is second to none. And for that, you know, you deserve all the praise in the world. And I just want to thank you and give you the bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give each of you the strength to be able to continue to do what you do. What Camp Pass continues to do year after year, always in its unbelievably unique way and special way that no one can really figure out what exactly is the secret recipe, but it works. Baruch Hashem, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help, it works. Someone told me that they were at a Fabrengen on Gimel Talmuz. And someone said that there's a beautiful comparison between the work of Chabad, the work of Lubavitch Rebbe, and Coca-Cola. Those are the two things you find everywhere on planet Earth. You can find Coca-Cola. We have two things of Coke right here, if anyone's thirsty. Right, you can find Coca-Cola anywhere in the world. You can find the Lubavitch Rebbe and his emissaries anywhere in the world. He said, but there's one difference. He said, the difference is that Coca-Cola, Kiyadua, has a secret recipe that they will not share with anyone in the world. And Lubavitch, Chabad, and Klal Yisrael have a recipe that they so badly want to share with any single person who's willing to take that recipe. And I was thinking about that on the ride up, and I was thinking Camp Pask has the secret recipe. They want to share, but no one knows exactly what it is. It's very hard to give it over what it is. But whatever it is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should just give you the Siyata Shemaya to continue to do the amazing things that you do. I remember it was Sunday morning last year. I spent the Shabbos with my family here last year. And it was Sunday morning, and I was saying Birchas HaTorah. And all of a sudden, it dawned upon me that there's probably no place on planet Earth, there's no avoda that a person is so dedicated to, that people are so dedicated to, which is a greater expression of the halachta b'dracha than the time you spend in Camp Pass. I was saying the brachas, I was saying the morning brachas in my sitter. And I was thinking, the halachta b'dracha, I've been waiting a year to share this with you. Halachta b'dracha, Chazal say, means you have to try to be like a Kodesh Baruch. And you just go through the brachos one by one by one, the things that a Kodesh Baruch does for us, and it's every single thing that you do. Hamechin mitzadeh gavar, to help people to guide their footsteps, literally to guide their footsteps. Zokev kefufim, to help people to stand up, who otherwise couldn't do it on their own. Malbish arumim. And you just go one by one by one. And these are the praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is how we open our eyes in the morning and we say, thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for doing all these things. And again, I look around the room and I say, but every one of you does these things also. And there's no greater expression of Allah for B'drach Hu than that. So again, I really just want to say thank you. I want to just tell you how much I respect you. I never spent the summer in Camp Pass. I would disappear for the summer to various kolo programs. And I never dedicated myself to Klal Yisrael the way that each and every one of you has already this summer. And again, it's such an unbelievable schus just to stand in your presence. So for people who are mechazik me, just by existing, just by being who you are, I want to try to mechazik you a little. You'll tell me at the end if it works. But I want to try to share some words of chizuk, because I know it is a grueling task. It's not a pashut avoda at all what you go through on a daily basis. And you're my heroes, and I want to be mechazik you. As the parsha begins with the story of a hero, Pinchas was a hero. Pinchas did a heroic act. Pinchas stepped up to the plate when it was a very shaky and unsteady time for Klal Yisrael. And it really, again, it spans the end of last week's parsha, the beginning of this week's parsha, that Klal Yisrael got themselves into a very bad place. And how did it come to be? The Torah tells us again, it's talking about the end of last week's parsha. Vayitzamed Yisrael Lebal Pa'or. B'nai Yisrael got connected, Vayitzamed, Chazal say, like an airtight seal. That's sure, Tzadi Mem Dalet. That they locked themselves in with the Baal Pa'or. And of course, it was in the context of things that we feel very uncomfortable talking about. The Arayos, the Znus that took place with the Benos Moab and Midian. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was so angry. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, we need to do something. And there's a Magefa raging in the camp. And finally, Pinchas steps up. He grabs a spear. Kozvi V'Zimri. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu's wrath settles down quite a bit. 24,000 Jews lost. And it's a strange way to end the Parsha. We usually have a rule that we don't end on a negative thing. But last week's Parsha ends on a rather bitter note. 24,000 Jews died in the Magif. Right? There's no like pasuk that you don't like repeat a nice pasuk to end like we do when we lay an Eicha, or when we used to lay an Eicha in the past. Right? We try to end on a positive note. The Parsha doesn't end on a positive note. The Parsha ends, 24,000 Jews died. Avodah Zarah, Arayos, Jews taking up arms against other Jews, Mesiras Nefesh for Torah, Jews crying, saying Shema according to Chazal, a very frightening and unsettling scene in the Torah. What is Baal Pa'or? It's not the most delicate topic, and it's not the most pleasant thing to speak about Barabbin, but there's a lesson in Baal Pa'or that is too critical for me to not share with you, that I just saw this year, and I want to use that as a spirit. Where is Pa'or? Pa'or is the place that Balak took Bilam up to that mountain of Pa'or. And Bilam says, listen, I need to prepare over here. He built his various altars, and he offered his karbanos, and he prepared himself to curse Klal Yisrael. And of course, he went on to bless Klal Yisrael. That's the place called Pa'or. Pa'or had a Baal. Baal means an Avodah Zarah. An Avodah Zarah that we call Baal Pa'or. The Jews got very deeply attached to Baal Pa'or. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, you need to kill these Jews or nitzmadim Baal Pa'or. Take up arms against them. There's a lot of things that are wrong here, but it's all rooted in Baal Pa'or. And the Torah actually in many places comes back, in strange places, it references back to this Avera, of the Avon of Baal Pa'or, what happened with Baal Pa'or. What exactly is Baal Pa'or? So again, it's a delicate thing, it's a strange thing to talk about Barabbim. But Rashi tells us at the end of last week's Parsha, Baal Pa'or was some type of very perverse, strange, and simply put, disgusting Avodah Zarah, where a person would literally expose himself or herself before Baal Pa'or and defecate before this idol. To relieve oneself in the presence of this idol. That's Avodah Zarah. That's some type of worship. In what kind of crazy, perverse way could a person claim that that's worshiping any type of God? That's a very, very strange thing. Gemara in Sanhedrin tells a story, Daf Samach Dal, the Gemara says there's a woman one time who was sick. You know, and as a person who finds himself or herself in a desperate situation, you make all sorts of promises. So this woman said, if I get better, I'm gonna worship every Avodah Zarah in the world. So she got better. And she traveled around, she went to this town, and she went to this mountaintop, and she went to this monastery, and this church, and she traveled the whole world, until finally she realized there was one Avodah Zarah yet to worship, one offering yet to offer. She comes about to the people who worship Baal Pa'or, and she says, how does this work over here? What do I do? She didn't know of the Avodah Zarah. She went around. She heard there's a Baal Pa'or. So she said, how does it work over here? How do I serve this God? So they told her. They said, you should eat these beets, which are very unsettling for the stomach. And you should drink some very strong drink, and it's going to upset your stomach, and then you'll be able to serve Baal Pa'or. And the woman said to these people, you're out of your mind. I'd rather go back to being sick than to do something this sick. Right? This is crazy. The Gemara goes on, the Gemara tells a story that there was a Jewish man who was once hired out as a wagon driver, and he's escorting this non-Jewish woman, and as they're traveling, they come to the temple of Baal Pa'or, and she gets out, she goes inside to worship, and then he says, okay, now I'm going to go inside. So she says, you're Jewish. He says, yeah, but I have a plan. So he decides he's going to go in, and he's going to do something to disgrace this idol. So he went in and did something very disgraceful to the idol. And the priests of Pa'or, I'm not even going to mention what he did exactly, and the Gemara is graphic in what he did, When the priests of Peor saw the way that he served this idol, they said to him, wow, Mekalsinol, they praised him. No one ever served this Avodah Zarah like this. A chiddush in Avodah Zarah. What an amazing chiddush you came up with. And therefore the Rambam paskins, like the Gemara concludes, that even if you go to Baal Peor and you do something disgraceful in front of it, that's how you serve it. And therefore that's considered Avodah Zarah. Even if your intention is to be Mavasa. What a strange thing. And to think, call yourself. Kodesh Kadoshim, the Jewish people, with a chelak elokam ima, with neshamas inside of ourselves, could get caught up in this, can get tied in with this. To such a degree that Chazal say that we were more attached to this than we were to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. To be dovuk to something is not as strong as what? As that shorash tzadi mem dali, we're attached to Baal Peor. What a strange and crazy sugya in the Torah. What are we to make of it? It's very, very strange. How do we explain this as, what were they thinking? How can we possibly explain this as a form of worship? Let's review the Rambam. How did the Avodah Zarah come to be? Avodah Zarah came to be because it was hard to worship only God, so we decided to worship things that are also very powerful and very impressive, like the sun and the moon, and it was sort of an intermediary to get to God. But how could anyone justify this as some type of worship? So, so strange. So I want to tell you two explanations. First, something just very profound that I saw already a number of years ago, from Rav Moshe Wolfson. Rav Moshe Wolfson was the Mashkiach in Torah Vadas, a Rav in Bar Park, Munas Yisrael. His farm were called the Munas Yitecha. He writes in this week's Parsha, Parshas Pinchas. He says on page 178, Baal Peor actually has a very profound message. Baal Peor essentially says, and it's something that is not so far away from what we believe, but it has to be understood carefully, that everything depends on your kavanah. Your actions don't really matter. Your intention is what's the main thing. I can bring a Maimon Chazal to support that. Rachmano Libabai, God desires the heart more so than the action. So Baal Peor expresses, I could do a disgusting action, but if my intentions are pure, whatever it meant to have pure intentions, if my commitment to this Avodah Zarah was 100%, regardless of how I actively, b'maisa, serve this Avodah Zarah, so that's maybe the highest level. Where I'm not worried about what the body's doing, I'm just concerned where my mind is, where my spirit is. That's a very lofty idea. It's a very great perversion of that idea. It's clearly not something we believe in, but I remember when I first saw that idea from a Wolf, I said, okay, I hear what they're trying to do. They're trying to say it's all about the kavanah, and the mice of the action doesn't really matter. Okay. But I found this year an explanation from Rav Huttner, quoted by Rav Volbi, Rav Shlomo Volbi, the great Mashkiach. Rav Volbi passed away in 2005, Mashkiach for 30 years in Ber Yaakov Yeshiva, the author of the Aleh Shur, again a very deep thinker, one of the great Bali Musar. And Rav Volbi quotes Rav Huttner, and this is why I dragged us through this dirt of Baal Peor to share with you this insight. And I want to elaborate on this insight. Listen to what Rav Huttner says. You know what Baal Peor is? Rav Huttner says Baal Peor is the ultimate expression, the greatest manifestation of cynicism and pessimism. What does it mean? Baal Peor creates an Avodah Zarah out of saying that nothing you do really matters at all. It's almost the opposite of what we learned a moment ago from Rav Wolfson. Rav Wolfson said that the Kavanah of Baal Peor is that your actions don't matter because Kavanah is so important. Says Rav Huttner, no, you know what Baal Peor says? Kavanah, whatever. Kavanah is not tangible. But even your actions, they don't really matter. It's not going to add up to anything. Says Rav Huttner, it doesn't matter what you put into your body, using the model of Baal Peor, whether you eat a $100 steak or you eat a juicy red apple, at the end of the day, it's all going to turn into excrement. A very disgusting, graphic, vile message. But it's a very painful message because you know what it says? You know what the Avodah Zarah Baal Peor is? Have a good time with your life. Do whatever you want. Because whatever you put into your life, forget what you put into your body, whatever you put into your life, it's not going to add up to anything. It's not really going to make a difference at the end of the day anyways. Because at the end of the day, you're just one small little human being on planet Earth. So you could try to change the world, but let's be realistic. At the end of the day, you're going to end up in a grave. Your bones and your flesh are going to rot away. So what difference does it really make? Baal Peor. It's all going nowhere anyways. So you might as well not bother trying. And there's probably nothing in the world that is as antithetical to Torah as the mindset of Baal Peor. of saying it doesn't really matter what you do. It's all gonna amount to nothing anyways. There is nothing as antithetical to Torah as such a mindset. Because as Torah Jews, we believe the very opposite. That every single thing that I put into my body, and every little bit of koach that I invest in the world, and that I invest in my fellow Jews, and I invest in humanity, it goes somewhere. And it does matter. And it does add up to something. And it's not just going to be wasted and flushed down the drain. Again, pardon the imagery. But it's something holy. It's something of substance. It's something that really matters to yourself and to people around you and to the entire world. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is paying attention. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to see what it is that you're doing. Bilam says in last week's parsha, because Bilam was forced to speak the greatest praises of Klal Yisrael, he wanted to say the greatest curses, but he said the greatest praises in the end. Bilam says, "Mi mana afar ya." Who can count? Who can enumerate? Who can put a price tag on the dirt of the Jewish people? On the dust of Yaakov? Rashi says, how many mitzvos do we do with dirty things, with dirt itself, with earth? Take, for example, the halachos of plowing and planting. Right? The types of animals I'm allowed to plow my dirt. God cares how I plow my dirt. God cares what type of species I plant next to one another in the dirt. God says, take a para, a duma, and turn it into ashes, and those ashes, those worthless ashes, can purify a person. It's dirt, it's nothing. Take a little dirt and mix it together with an erased scroll and give it to the Isha Sota, and hopefully you can restore marital harmony. Which Hashem says, I'm prepared to erase my name to make Shalom Bayis. But you need to add a little bit of dirt. Look how Klal Yisrael take dirt, and they elevate it, and they elevate it, and they elevate it. And they bring it to, they turn it into a mitzvah, and they turn it into a davar shebe kedusha. Out of the seemingly most unholy things, out of the most tedious, mundane, burdensome, lowly things, the Jewish people have the ability to elevate and to elevate and to elevate. Rav Sheila Belzer, the Shu of Belz, said that he knew, and again, a tzaddik says something like this, you don't question. The tzaddik said, I knew two young rabbinic scholars, two young men, studying Torah, who were Bali Ruach HaKodesh. They were Bali Ruach HaKodesh. They had Ruach HaKodesh, Kipshuta. Not just they were great guys, and they learned Torah on a high level. When Rav Sheila Belzer said someone's a Bali Ruach HaKodesh, it meant that he was a Bali Ruach HaKodesh. He said, I know two young men who became Bali Ruach HaKodesh, and I can tell you how they became Bali Ruach HaKodesh. And again, I don't know how the tzaddik knew these things. I don't know how he knew to identify this as the thing that gave them somehow access to Ruach HaKodesh. But listen to what Rav Sheila Belzer said. He said they became Bali Ruach HaKodesh because on the way to davening in the morning, they would get up a few minutes early, and they would stop off at the bathroom, at the outhouse, and they would make sure that it was properly cleaned, so that people who need to use the bathroom will be able to find a clean bathroom in the morning. And because of that sensitivity to human beings, that people should be able to, again, to have that decency in their life, these two Jews, Kipshuto, became Bali Ruach HaKodesh. Because by a Jew, there's nothing that we do that's too insignificant, that's not holy, that's not valuable. The dirt of Klal Yisrael, says Bilam HaRasha, Mi Mana Ofer Yaakov. Who could even put a price tag on the dirt of Klal Yisrael? With this understanding of a footner, that again, the fight against Baal Peor is the fight against pessimism, is the fight against cynicism, is that part of ourselves, that nagging part of ourselves in the back of our mind, that questions, is this really going to add up to anything? Is my life going to add up to anything? Is this particular act of Torah, word of Torah, act of chesed, word of tefillah, is it going to do anything? Is it going to move anything? Is it going to bring Mashiach? We have to fight against it. That's the fight against Baal Peor. The Torah mentions Baal Peor in many places, I told you. In Parshas Ve'eschanan, Baal Peor is mentioned in a very surprising place. Two places in the Torah, Devarim Perek Dalet, again in Devarim Perek Yud Gimel, it talks about the prohibition of adding on or subtracting from the Torah. And the Torah says, don't add on, don't subtract, lo sosifu ala davar asher anochi metzav eschem, lo sigru mimenu, don't add, don't take away. Very next pasuk, Parshas Ve'eschanan, Perek Dalet, pasuk Beis and Gimel, einecham haros es asher osa Hashem b'Baal Peor. Don't subtract or add on to mitzvos, because remember, your eyes saw what happened when those Jews got involved with Baal Peor. The terrible Magepha, 24,000 Jews killed. Why does Hashem reference this Why does Moshe say, V'atzi Yisrael, listen up. If you add or subtract from the mitzvos, remember what your own eyes saw with Baal Peor. What's the kesher between these things? Not to take away, not to add to mitzvos. Remember what happened. There's ramifications. Baal Peor, very, very strange. So I want to share with you two mashalim from the Dubna Magid. The Halig of Dubna Magid, right, Rav Yaakov Kranz lived in the 18th century, a little bit younger than the Vilna Gaon, but the Vilna Gaon loved him very much. He invited him to move to Vilna from elsewhere in Lithuania. He wanted him to be available to him, and the Dubna Magid had the daunting challenge at times of giving Musar to the Vilna Gaon. Imagine? Talk about the Vilna Gaon, who had like a calculation every year how many seconds he wasted. His Bittul Torah came out to like, you know, 1 minute and 12 seconds. So now the Dubna Magid have to go and give him Musar Shmuz. Right, but he did. And the Dubna Magid is known for his mashal and for his amazing parables and stories. So I want to share with you two mashalim of the Dubna Magid, which I think can shed some light on this connection between Baal Tosif and Baal Tigra, don't add, don't subtract, and Baal Por. What's so bad about adding on to mitzvahs? Dubna Magid says, I understand why you can't take away mitzvahs. What if I want to do something extra for Hashem? What's wrong with adding on? The Dubna Magid has an amazing mashal. He says, it's a famous mashal, it's a beautiful mashal. He says, imagine, Reuven comes to his friend Shimon one day, knocks on his door. My dear neighbor Shimon, I'm eating my breakfast, I don't have a spoon, can I borrow one of your silver spoons? Sure, no problem. So he lends him a spoon, and later that day, Reuven comes back. He comes to Shimon's home, and he gives him back the spoon that he gave him, and he gives him a smaller little silver spoon. So he says, what's this? I lent you the big spoon. What's with this little spoon? He says, mazel tov, mazel tov. From the time I borrowed your spoon got pregnant, and your spoon had a baby. So mazel tov. I mean, it's your spoon, so the little spoon is yours also. So Shimon says, okay, mazel tov, drink a l'chaim, whatever, I don't know what they did. Okay, shkoda, you know. Next day, Reuven comes by again. He says, I'm having some family over, I'm cooking a big dinner, I need some kalim. Do you have that big copper pot that I see that you use sometimes? Can I borrow that? So he says, sure, no problem. So he takes the copper pot, he makes a big festive meal for his family, he comes back the next day, and along with the big copper pot, he brings this little copper pot. And Shimon says, what's this? The Reuven says, mazel tov, mazel tov. Your copper pot had a child. Mazel tov. He says, okay, gevaldik, beautiful. Ah, so many simchas. You know, we should only see each other by simchas. Yeah. Comes back the next day and he says, I'm having a big event in our home. I know you have that big silver menorah on your dining room table. Can I borrow the silver menorah from your dining room table? Sure. You know? I have little menorahs for my kids for Hanukkah. This is perfect. So he glances in the menorah. Day goes by, 2 days go by, 3 days go by, a week goes by. There's no sign of him. So he runs into him one day at the train station. And Reuven, Shimon says to me, he says, what's with my silver menorah? And Reuven looks at him and he goes, I've been avoiding you, I'm embarrassed, I don't know what to say, I feel terrible. He says, you know, I took the menorah back to my house, and shortly after I brought it home, the menorah got very sick. And I did my best to take care of it, but your menorah passed away. Your menorah passed away. So he says, you're a lunatic, give me back my menorah, that costs thousands of dollars. Right? So he says, well, I don't understand, what's the problem? He says, well, a menorah can't die. He says, oh. He says, so when I told you that the spoon had a baby and the copper pot had a baby, that you didn't have any questions on. But I tell you the menorah dies, now you have questions. So says the Dubna Magid, a person starts to work out a business deal with a Kadosh Baruch Hu. He says, Hashem, I gave you a little extra today, I gave you a little extra tomorrow. Right? If I add on to mitzvahs, then I'm going to think that I'm allowed to take away from mitzvahs. So the Torah says, do me a favor. Don't add on and don't take away. That's one mashal from the Dubna Magid. But I want to tell you a second mashal from the Dubna Magid, which I think if we connect to Rav Hutner's Yisod, we'll understand the connection in a very deep way between Baal Tigra, Baal Tosif, and Baal Peor. There's a Maimer Chazal, the Gemara, it's a Maseches Bava Kama, where the Gemara says, anyone who says about a Kadosh Baruch Hu that he doesn't care about the details, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't pay attention, a Kadosh Baruch Hu is willing to be Mavater, HaKadosh Baruch Hu lets things slide, or something's not so serious. Anyone who says such a thing, we say to such a person, Yevatru Chaya, his life should be overlooked. You say Hashem overlooks things, your life should be overlooked. In the Talmud Yerushalmi and Shkalim, there's a little bit of a different nusach. That a person who says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu overlooks things, Hashem should overlook his intestines. Says the Dibna Magid, I'll explain what this line of Chazal means. Imagine a rich person and a poor person are making a simcha for their family. A wedding. And the poor person, he's scraping together, he's trying to figure out what he's going to serve. Oh, he's cooking himself, can't afford a caterer, can't afford anything. He's borrowing tables and chairs. And he sees that the rich guy is setting up this big tent in the town square to make a simcha for his daughter's chasen. So he goes down to the tent to see what's going on over there. He wants to see, I can at least get some advice and figure out how to make a chasen for my own children. He goes there, he walks into the tent, he sees the tables are set. And he sees it's unbelievable. By every place setting, there's three forks and three spoons and two knives and four different drinking glasses and goblets and many plates and a big cup and a little cup and a big saucer and a big plate and a small plate. So he turns to one of the waiters and he says, "This is gevaldik." He says, "I'm making a simcha. I don't have everything that I need. I see there's a lot of extra things here. So maybe I'll just take a couple of forks and a couple of spoons, right? And a couple of extra knives, because I see there's so many extra by every seat that, it shouldn't be a big deal for me to borrow." So the waiter looks at him and he says, "Wow, you must be a very poor man. You've never seen what a gourmet meal looks like. Don't you realize that the little fork is for the fruit, right? And the slightly bigger fork is for the fish, and the little spoon is for the sorbet, and the big spoon is for the soup, and there's a knife for spreading the butter, and there's a knife for cutting the steak, and there's a glass for red wine and white wine. It's all a set. There's nothing here that's extra. It's perfect the way that it is. Not one piece of silver on any of these tables is extra." Says the Dibna Magid, imagine a person came over to you and said, "I'm having some intestinal problems, and I Googled it, and I saw that the intestine is actually like 30 feet long. So I was wondering if I can maybe just borrow like a little piece of your intestine." So you would say to the person, "That's completely crazy. This is a set. I can't cut out a foot of my intestine just because I have a lot of it. It's a unit. It's a set. Nothing here is extra." HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Klal Yisrael, "Don't add on, don't take away from my mitzvos." As the Malbim explains, again, the very nature of Baal Tigra and Baal Tosif, don't add on, don't take away, because Torah is Hashem Tamima. Hashem's Torah is perfect the way that it is. You don't need to add to it, you don't need to take away from it. But with all these ideas in mind, I think now, using Rav Huttner's Yesod, we could say a very simple explanation. And what's the connection to Baal Torah? Hashem says, "My Torah is perfect. Just, if you follow my Torah, if you do what I ask you to do, whether it's Torah, whether it's Tefillah, whether it's Chesed, whether it's Bein Adam L'Chaveiro or Bein Adam L'Makom, if you follow the recipe of the Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, everything that you do is so significant. Yes, the Shulchan Aruch says, put on your right shoe before your left shoe. That matters. And if you don't believe that it matters, well, remind yourself what happened at Baal Peor. Remind yourself the attitude where you can get into the mindset, well, you know what? If it doesn't really matter if I put my right shoe on before my left shoe, well, maybe it doesn't matter if I shut off a light on Shabbos. Maybe it doesn't matter if I keep kosher. Maybe nothing matters. And that's Baal Peor. And therefore the Torah fights back and says, don't add on, don't subtract. Just do the mitzvahs and believe that whatever it is that you're doing, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks of you to do, it's holy. It's important. HaKadosh Baruch Hu cares about it, he's paying attention, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is keeping score. And you know what? What's the very next pasuk? If you cling to the mitzvahs, you realize you're clinging to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It could be something like those two bachrim scrubbing the toilets before davening, who became Bali Ruach HaKodesh, because they did what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted for them, to provide for other Jewish people. I want to connect this idea to the month of Tammuz, because it's very, very deeply connected to the month in which we find ourselves. Tammuz, we know, Svarim HaKadoshim tell us, is a time of Re'iyah, a time of vision, a time of seeing things with the right perspective. I know Rav Judah spoke about it the other night, that piece on the Moor of HaShemesh. I listened to all the Shirim, so keep posting. Chodesh Tammuz is a time of proper perspective, to see things the way that it's meant to be seen. We know, again, the Svarim developed this idea that every month has a name of Hashem that's connected to that month. An arrangement of the letters of Hashem's name, Yud, He, Vav, and He, it can be arranged 12 different ways for the 12 different months. The month of Tammuz, the name of Hashem for the month of Tammuz, and if a person's on such a level, they have this in mind when they say Hashem's name, when they make a bracha, when they daven. The name of Hashem, the letters of Hashem's name for the month of Tammuz, is Hashem's name backwards. He, Vav, He, Yud. Which makes sense. It's a time where we feel that Kadosh Baruch Hu has turned his back on us. It's a time of din. It's a very uncomfortable time. It's a zman of korban. The Sfarim say that every name of Hashem has a pasuk that's connected to it also. that this Shem Hashem, Hey Vav Hey Yod, is hinted to in a pasuk. It's hinted to in the words of another very pessimistic human being, namely Haman Harasha, a Malik who also sees things in the most negative possible way, a Baal Peor mentality. Haman says, "It's true. I have some good things in my life. I have an okay life." Haman, what are you talking about? You have everything. No, I don't have everything. I don't have Mordechai. And when I see Mordechai sitting by the gate, when I see this one Jew who won't respect me the way that I demand to be respected, you know what? V'chol zeh einenu shoveh li. Those are the words of Haman HaRasha. Zeh einenu shoveh li. Everything is worthless. It's mamash Baal Peor. Everything's a waste. My whole life is nothing. If I don't have Mordechai, I have nothing. Haman, you have so much. A little Akar Satov, a little Ayin Tov. No, I have nothing. So the Sfarim say, look at the words, Zeh, Einenu, Shoveh Li. Look at the last letters of those four words. Zeh, the last letter of Zeh is a Hey. Einenu is a Vav. Shoveh is a Hey. And Li is a Yud. So Hey Vav, Hey Yud. It's Hashem's name completely backwards. But that's an Amalek mentality. To walk around, and this is what we're fighting against in Chodesh Tammuz. So we're reading these parshas. We're fighting against people who want to tell us, Zeh Einenu Shoveh Li. It's not worth it. It's too hard, it's too burdensome, and it's not worth your time. It's not important enough. It's not valuable enough. Right? It's not going to add up to anything. We push back and we say, there's nothing in the world that's stam. There's nothing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks of us that doesn't carry with us unbelievable value. We say, to have this attitude of Zeh Einenu Shoveh Li, it's an Amalek attitude. It's a Baal Peor attitude. It's a Sitra Achra attitude. Klal Yisrael's on the side of Kedusha. Hashem is the side of Kedusha. True Chaim, clinging to holy things. The Svarim Kedoshim refer to the Yetzahara and the Kat delay and all of the Yetzahara's workers as the Sitra Achra, literally translated as the other side. So I'll tell you a remez. Those of you who know me know I like gematrias. Zeh Einenu Shoveh Li. Zeh Einenu Shoveh Li, a person who says Zeh Einenu Shoveh Li, again the name of Tammuz, Hey Vav Hey Yud, the last letters of that phrase, Zeh Einenu Shoveh Li, Haman Amalek, negativity, pessimism. Zeh Einenu Shoveh Li is Gematria Sitra Achar. So you decide whose team you want to be. 408. Are you going to be the type of person who says Zeh Einenu Shoveh Li? It's not worth it. It's not going to add up to anything. But that's a Sitra Achar. That's a Sitra Achar mentality. Where does Tammuz come from? You know where the name comes from? Does the word Tammuz appear in Tanakh? Anyone know? One time. It's a pasuk in Yecheskel. One time in Yecheskel Paraches, one time we find the word Tammuz. The pasuk says Yecheskel is seeing all sorts of strange visions of Avodah Zarah, and Yecheskel is brought into an inner chamber. V'inei sham ha-nashim yoshos, there are women sitting there, mivakos es ha-tammuz, crying with the Tammuz. Crying with an Avodah Zarah called HaTammuz. What was this Avodah Zarah? Look at the Mefarshim on Yecheskel. What's this idol called HaTammuz? Which is, again, where the month gets its name from. There's an idol, apparently, they would heat it up. Tammuz, that Shoresh means to be heated. That's why this time of the year is very hot. So Tammuz, yeah, they would take this idol, they would heat it up, and apparently it had eyes that were made out of lead, and it would get so hot that the eyes, the lead, it was in the eyes of this idol would start to melt and it would start to drip and it would look like this idol was crying. And you would cry along with it. That's what the pasuk describes here. Yoshuos mevakos es ha-tammuz. Sitting there and crying along with the tammuz. Crying over the tammuz. Chodesh tammuz and Chodesh Av is a time where we need to really think what's worth crying over. Because when the Meraglim came back, and the Jews cried on that night of Tisha B'Av. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'll give you something to cry about. You're crying, you're complaining, Zeh Einenu Shoveh Li. You're walking around with an attitude that it's not worth it. That Avodas Hashem is too tiresome, it's not worth it, it's too schleppy, it's too burdensome. That's a Sitra Achra attitude. The Gematria Zeh Einenu Shoveh Li. That's a terrible, terrible attitude. So isn't it interesting? I'll tell you another Gematria. You know what the Gematria of HaTammuz is? Baal Peor. Because a person who has the attitude of HaTammuz, a person who has this mindset of crying over the wrong things, where my eyes are not in the right place, where I don't see things the way Hashem wants us to see things, so then, yeah, that's a Baal Peor mentality. That's a Sitra Achra mentality. Hatamas is 458, Balpur is 458. So again, whose team do you want to be on? How do you want to spend the month of Tammuz? Do you want to develop an eyesight that says that every single thing that I do is Kodesh Kadashim? Or do I want to walk around complaining, saying, Zayinenu Shovli, it's too hard at times. It's not worth it. It's not going to add up to anything. I'll tell you a nice pshat. The word Zeh in Tanakh often means to be able to see something. Right? Like take by Kriyas Yamsuf. Zeh Keli Vanveh. Remember the Rashi on Zeh Keli Vanveh? Zeh Keli Vanveh, the Jews were able to point. They saw Hashem in some type of clear way. Zeh, they could point. Marin Be'etzva. Zeh, Achodesh HaZeh Lachem. Hashem pointed to the moon to show Moshe what the new moon looks like. Zeh means to see something. Again, the phrase for the month of Tammuz is Zeh Einanu Shoveli. So I'm going to tell you how to read the pasuk like a yid. I'll show you how a Jew reads those four words. A Jew sometimes looks at himself or herself and says, Zeh Einanu. Zeh Einanu. My vision is blurry. Zeh means to point, to be able to see. To see the connection between cleaning a toilet and becoming a Baal Ruach HaKodesh, like Rav Sheila Belzer saw on those bachur. Zeh Einanu, sometimes Zeh Einanu, I can't see, my eyes are blurry with the Avodah Zarah of the Tammuz, whose eyes were blurry with this melting lead out of its eyes. Zeh Einanu, sometimes the Zeh is Einanu, I can't see what's going on. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu finishes the Pasuk, and Hashem says, Shove Li, trust me, it's worth it for me. Hashem says, it's worth it for me, and it's worth it to me. I'm paying attention. You may not be able to see with your physical eyes how significant it is what you do. But I promise you, when you watch the videotape one day from the heavenly perspective, you'll see. You'll see what you were doing. And Hashem says, Shova Li. It was worth it to me. Medrash says, anytime you have the word Li, Li is a code word for something that's Netzach Netzach. Hashem says, Shova Li. This is eternity. You've created eternity with this Maisa that you couldn't even see with your own eyes. I'll share with you a very Chashuv teaching. A Chashuv teaching from a very seemingly Pashut person. When John F. Kennedy went in 1961 to the NASA headquarters for the first time, and America was trying to figure out how we're going to get a human being on the moon, which they were zochet to do in 1969. In 1961, JFK went to NASA headquarters, and when he walked in, he saw a janitor pushing a map through the halls. So he says to him, he says, oh, you know, Mr. President walks in, he strike up a conversation, he was a friendly person. So he says to this janitor, he says, tell me, you know, well, what do you do here at NASA? So he says to Mr. President, what do I do here? I'm helping to put a man on the moon. You're pushing a broom, you're sweeping up after the rocket scientists, right, who are leaving, you know, papers of equations in their trails. And yet this janitor said, no, I'm part of the team here. And if I'm pushing a broom, if I'm mopping a floor, Mr. President, I'm helping to put a man on the moon. That's what I'm doing. You may not understand how it works here, but you'll see. You'll see that my role on this team is going to put that man on the moon. Eventually, America was able to put a man on the moon. So things don't always look the way that we see them. You read through the Parsha, you had a chance to read through the Parsha. It's been a busy week, I'm sure. You read through the Parsha, and you start to look at Klal Yisrael being counted once again. Mi mana ofer Yaakov, who can count the dust of Yaakov? So we make a count in this week's Parsha. Who's got some big numbers in this week's Parsha? You notice? Which Shevet has big numbers in the Parsha? Shevet Dan. Shevet Dan's got some really big numbers in the Parsha. When you add up Shevet Dan, they're a big family. 60,000 plus. You know whose family is almost 20,000 people smaller? Shevet Binyamin. Binyamin ends up somewhere in the 40,000s. It's pretty interesting, no? Because Binyamin had 10 children, and Dan had one child who was deaf, right? And you would have imagined, presumably, that Binyamin and his 10 children, over time, would grow to be much bigger than Shevet Dan with his one deaf child, Hushim. Yet the Chofetz Chaim points out in the Sefer HaTorah in this week's Parsha that things aren't always as they appear to be. That yes, Dan's son, who was not able to hear, who was not like everyone else, who could have easily been said that, you know, you're not gonna be like the other big shvachim. Shevet Dan becomes, in fact, the biggest shevet. Chushim ben Dan. Chushim, the Sfarim say, is Osios Mashiach. That's how it's spelled in the Torah. There's no vav. Ches Shin Yud Mem. Mashiach. Chushim ben Dan becomes who? Becomes the shevet. Becomes the big shevet. So the Chofetz Chaim says, If a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants to make the underdog, if a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants to help a janitor put a man on the moon, he could do it. And if Hashem wants to turn a person who cleans a toilet into a Baal Ruach HaKodesh, he could do it. Because a Kodesh Baruch Hu is keeping score. And a Kodesh Baruch Hu is not laughing. And a Kodesh Baruch Hu is not the Sitra Ach, a Kodesh Baruch Hu is the Sitra, the Kedusha. And a Kodesh Baruch Hu is not Baal Peor. And a Kodesh Baruch Hu is not connected to any of that world of Einenu Shoveli. That it's not worth it. The attitude that a Jew has to fight against in Chodesh Tammuz. To be able to look at Hushim ben Dan and say, you're going to be the biggest one day. This generation is going to bring Mashiach in a way that doesn't necessarily add up. Ze'inenu, our eyes don't see it. I can't point to it. I can't explain it exactly. I can't tell you the secret recipe. But libi omerli that it's true. Again, I told you the gematria of Ze'inenu shoveli is gematria sitra ach. So I'll add to that gematria. I'll add a little bit to that gematria. Hushim ben Dan, when we first meet him in the Torah, the Torah tells us, Ubnei Dan Chushim. We know for everything negative in the world, there's a positive that fights against it. For every action, there's an equal and an opposite reaction, right? Newton's law. That's true in spirituality as well. For everything negative that exists in the world, for all the Hamans are going to say, Zayin and Shovali. For the Sitra Acha that's going to root against you. Remember the story, Ubnei Dan, the children of Dan, Chushim, this one son. The gematria ubnei dan chushim, as it's spelled in the Torah, the first time we see it, is gematria zein and shovali. Zelu umazze. Zelu umazze. One fighting against the other. 480. Ubnei dan chushim. Because a yid has to walk around saying, like the Navi says, va'amech kulam tzadikim. I'm a tzadik. I'm a tzadik. I'm carrying klal yisrael. That every single Jew matters, and every single act of tzidkus matters. Va'amech kulam tzadikim is gematria 480. Believe it or not. To walk around and say, yes, I'm a tzaddik. I'm a tzaddikus. My actions matter, my tefillahs matter, my Torah matters. To walk around with that attitude, to fight against the Avodah Zarah of Tammuz, to fight against the Avodah Zarah of Baal Peor, the gematria, the same gematria, Tammuz gematria Baal Peor. To be mechazik yourselves on those long days, on those really tiresome days, when you feel that, you know what, maybe coming to Camp Pass, I'll say it very honestly, you might say to yourself once in a while, and I hope you don't, and I know your Rebbeim don't speak this way, and they speak the opposite this way, but it's hard sometimes to believe it. You know, because you might speak to a friend who's on a different type of summer program, you know, who's involved in more obvious forms of ruchnius, right, in some type of silly, immature way of looking at things, that they're learning more, and they have easier time davening with more kavana, right, because they're not as busy with campers who need their attention so badly. So you might look at someone else who has a different experience, and you might feel that, you know what? There's something spiritually compromised about coming to Camp Pass. My Shabbos is compromised in Camp Pass. So let me tell you a story that I think will be mechazik. I heard this story from the mouth of the Suchina Rebbe Shli, the Matel Zil. The Suchina Rebbe said when he was a kid in Williamsburg, he had a doctor whose name was Dr. Burstein. We spoke a little bit about this doctor. He wasn't a chassid, he was a yekeshe yet, he called him. But he had a strong connection to the Satmar Rav. So Gina Rebbe said he remembered as a child, he went to this doctor on a Motzei Shabbos, and this doctor apologized for coming late. He said he was by the Satmar Rav's Shovavim Drashos. It was a very special Erlech Yid. One of this doctor's sons is a Rosh Hashiva in Lakewood. A very fine Erlech Adak. And this doctor, as Williamsburg, you know, became filled, Baruch Hashem, with Jewish children, he said it was almost every single Shabbos that he would get calls on Shabbos to deal with issues of pikuach nefesh. And we know the halacha. Pikuach nefesh is docha Shabbos. We know that. But there comes a point where if you're always being mechal Shabbos, and again, it's chil Shabbos that's mutter, it's not really called chil Shabbos, right? But it doesn't feel like Shabbos anymore. It doesn't feel... So this doctor went to the Satmar Rav, the Satmar Rebbe, Rav Yoilish, and he said to him, he said, you know, maybe it's time that we get a non-Jewish doctor to deal with the Shabbos issues. It's a lot. It's a lot to be getting phone just for Shabbos. And the Rebbe, the Satmar Rav, had tremendous respect for this doctor, and he felt more comfortable with him. He said, no, I'd rather you continue to be the doctor. So this doctor burst in, said to him, so what's going to be with my Shabbos? My Shabbos is so compromised by my responsibility. So the Satmar Rebbe said to him, have you heard about my Hoshana Rabbah? Have you heard about my Hoshana Rabbah? So I ask you, have you heard about the Satmar Rebbe's Hoshana Rabbah? 6-7 hours, bichios noros, crying and crying and crying. The Struchina Rebbe said, He remembers being there when he was younger. And he said, I never saw someone cry with so much koach for such a long period of time. It was superhuman. There's tapes of it. The wailing, the bechias, the whole tzibur crying. That was his day, more than Yom Kippur. Hoshana Rabbi, the Satmar Rav, was the biggest thing by him. So the Satmar Rav turned to this Dr. Burstein and he said to him the following. He said, I want to make a business with you. I want to do a business deal with you. He said, you give me your Chilul Shabbos, and I'll give you one of my Hoshana Rabbis. Make a trade. You don't like your Chilul Shabbos? Okay, I'll trade you. I'll give you one of my Hoshana Rabbis, and you give me your Chilul Shabbos. After that, this Dr. Burstein understood that my Chilul Shabbos is worth a lot more than I thought it was worth. And he kept quiet after that. But that's not the end of the mice. Dr. Burstein, this Halakha doctor, provided for so many Jews. Because he understood that providing for Jews was more important than being able to sit comfortably around this Shabbos table with a bowl of children or to daven a little slower and sure. This Dr. Burstein passed away on Hoshana Rabbah. And the Satmar Rav went to the Levaya right before his Hoshanos. And then came back and did whatever he did for his 6 or 7 hours of Hoshanos. And I heard from this Tuchina Rebbe, Mistama, he was escorting as the Satmar Rav had his Aliyah Neshama on Hoshana Rabbah. Presumably he was escorting that neshama of this holy doctor up to the Olam HaEmes, on Hoshana. A person has to have the right perspective. You have to see things the way that they really are. It's hard sometimes. It's not easy. It's not easy to appreciate what it is that you're doing here. Right? After a long day, and a guest speaker is speaking for too long, it's hard. It's hard. And it's a hot day, because it's Chodesh Tammuz. Right? And there's a part of you that might be saying, okay, Moshe Tzvei Zayin and Hashovali, you know, it's enough. We got it. Right? But to remind yourself and to be able to say to yourself be'emes u'b'leiv shalim that what I'm doing is the most important thing in the world. And not just to say that as a word of chizuk or a nice vart, but to say that because it's true. To believe that what you're doing here day in and day out in Camp Hess, the Satmar Rav would trade maybe multiple Hoshana Rabbis to be able to get a taste, to get a taste of the unbelievable tzchuyos that each and every one of you is going to have. But you have to say that to yourself. You have to be able to say it and mean it. Be able to say it to yourself and to mean it. I was looking at pictures. I was looking at pictures on the website. Beautiful. You know? Tweets, pictures, videos. Just to see the smiling faces of the campers. And I noticed in so many pictures, I noticed that in Camp Hess, so often you see a counselor, right? Sometimes schwitzing because it's hot outside, carrying a camper. Literally carrying on your back a camper. Sometimes it's a small camper, it's a cute little camper, and sometimes it's quite a large camper. Sometimes in the front, sometimes on your side, sometimes on your leg, sometimes on your arm, on your shoulder, on your, right? But carrying campers. Very often a camper riding atop a counselor on the counselor's back. So you don't need anything to add to that. The picture is worth more than anything I could possibly say. But I want to give you a kavanah to mechazik. You know how the letter tzadi is written in the Sefer Torah? How do you write the letter tzadi, sometimes pronounced tzadik? How do you write the letter tzadik? How do you write that letter? The way that it's written in the Sefer Torah, it's a nun with a yud on its back. It's a nun with a yid on its back. It's a nun with a yud on its back. So the Sfarim say, but an aleph also has a yud on its back. Look at the aleph, it's a vav with a yud on top. It's also carrying a yud on its back. That's why I'm saying no, but by an aleph, there's also a yud under. And it's also stepping on you. But tzaddik is the one who carries a yud on his back. So next time you have this chus to pick up a camper, and carry that camper on your shoulders, just know that you're a tzaddik. V'ameh chulam tzaddikim, believe it. Believe it, be'emes v'leiv shalom. That what you're doing is the holiest thing in the world. Believe that and to really believe it. And by the way, in the Ksav of the Arizal, you know what the Yud looks like? It's a backwards Yud. You know what the Svarim say? You have Yidin, you have Yudin that are sometimes, you know, regular run-of-the-mill Yudin. And if you carry that Yud, that also makes you a tzaddik. But if you carry a Yid who's a little bit different, if you carry a Yud, it's a little bit backwards, it's not as regular as maybe some other Yudin, then you're creating that Arizal. Then you're creating that Arizal tzaddik. Right? Then you're tapping into the soul of what it means to really, in the deepest of ways, to be a tzaddik. This is called a Torah Kula, my friends. Yeseres HaDibros. the Aseret HaDibros, 620 letters in the Aseret HaDibros. Corresponding, the Svarim say, the Shlach Kadosh says, corresponding to 613 mitzvos and 7 mitzvos derabanan. What's the bottom line? After you go through the entire Aseret HaDibros, how does it end on the following two words? Asher L'Re'ach. Because the bottom line of Kol HaTorah Kula, of the entirety of the Torah, is what are you going to do for another year? Asher L'Re'ach. Are you going to carry a Jew on your back? Are you going to lift a Jew up? These are days of unbelievable potential, and these are days of Chorban. And the difference is, do I help another Jew? I heard a Vart from a Rav in Miami. He said, the word Nun Shin Mem He can be pronounced in one of two ways, and they mean very different things. If I gave you the letters Nun Shin Mem He, and I said, what's the word? Nu, what's the word? Neshama. But if you're not speaking carefully, and God forbid, instead of putting a kamatz under the shin, you put a patach under the shin, you turn it into neshama, so then you're reading the Haftorah for Parshas Parah. And if you're reading the Haftorah for Parshas Parah from Yecheskel Perek Lamed Vav, va'aretz ha'neshama ke'aveh. Neshama means chorban, means destruction. So what's the difference between the word neshama and the word neshama? Neshama has a kamatz, and neshama has a patach. No, so what's the difference between a soul, the essence of who you are, and neshama, chorban? The difference between the kamatz and the patach is one little thing. This is the patach. Right? The only thing that the kamatz has that the patach doesn't have is something under it supporting. Because if you're lifting something up, if you're lifting someone up, then you're lifting their neshama. You're carrying their soul. You're making a big difference. You're carrying a piece of godliness through this world. A chelak elokam yimal that's trying to find its way through this world. There is no greater thing in the world that you could possibly do. There are many ways to acquire things. These drinks were given to me by some very generous people. Right? I haven't really acquired it yet, because it's sitting on the table. There's different ways to acquire something in Allah. You could do a kinyan mashicha, you could do a kinyan chazaka, you could do a kinyan called hagbah. Hagbah means lifting up. The Gemara says in the name of Rabbi Shimon, which of course is Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, listen carefully, that the ultimate kinyan is hagbah, is lifting up. You could acquire an elephant through a kinyan hagbah. It's not so easy. But if you have the strength, you could acquire anything. Anything you could pick up, you've made the kinyan. You can make a kinyan mashicha. You can try to pull someone over to your side. You can make a kinyan chazaka. You can sometimes be a chazak with someone. But the ultimate way to be kona someone, the ultimate way to be kona something of real substance, is to what? Is to do a kinyan hagbah. When you lift up, when you carry a Jew, says Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, someone who knew a lot about what it meant to carry Jews, that when you lift someone up, when you carry a Jew, right, that's the ultimate kinyan. That's the ultimate way to help them to have their chelik in the world, and it's the ultimate way for you to have your chelik. So I want to just end with one more mice. A mice from someone whose yard sale was today. Maybe it's not a household name, it's a name of a chashuv person we should know. Rabbi Tzion Abba Shaul. Rabbi Tzion Abba Shaul, a great Sephardi Chacham, Rosh Yeshiva of Porat Yosef, Rabbi Tzion Abba Shaul was once presented with the following din Torah. Today was his yahrzeit, the 19th of Tammuz. He said that I only know one story, but it's his yahrzeit today. And again, it's a very fitting story for this beautiful tzibur. He said one time two people came to him, a bus driver and a person who was like a bus monitor. And they had a din Torah. And they wanted the Rosh Yeshiva to decide who's right. The olden days, when you would get on the bus, right? So the bus didn't have automatic doors. The bus had actually a very heavy door that required some serious manual labor to open up that door. To swing open that door. So the bus driver, when he would drive his bus, picking up little children on their way to yeshiva, and cheder in the morning, the bus driver said, my job is to drive the bus. Your job, the bus monitor, is to make sure the kids are safe on the bus. So when I pull up to the stop and the kids are about to get on the bus, it's your job, Mr. Bus Monitor, to open the door. Again, it's taxing, it's burdensome, to open the door, to let the kids onto the bus. Right? And this person said, no, that's part of the bus driver's job. The bus driver opens the door. So they came to Rabbi Tzion Abba Shaul, and they told him, we're having a machlokas, whose job it is to open the door of the bus. Whose job is it to open the door of the bus? So Rabbi Tzion Abba Shaul said, I understand. He said, it must be, before you explain the case, it must be that you're each fighting for the schus of opening up the door. Because you understand that opening the door to let a child onto a bus to go to learn Torah, a little kid who's not learning such deep, profound Torah, But letting a child onto the bus to learn Torah is more chashuv than opening up the aron, where sometimes people really fight over. And people pay top dollar for it to get the psicha by ne'ila. So he says, it must be that you're fighting about it. He says, that's a good machlokas. That's a hard question to decide. Who should have the schus? Who should have the schus of swinging open that heavy door? And it was at that point the two of them realized what a terrible mistake they had made. That we should be fighting over the schus of carrying another wheelchair up a flight of stairs. Carrying another camper on our back. It's tiresome. It's burdensome. It's not easy avodah. But it's the most chashuv avodah in the world. So I give each of you a bracha. We're in the ikvus of the Mashiach. We're at the end of this. I want to read one vart, and with this I promise I'm done. I want to read one vart from a sefer Marganisa de Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir promised Shlana. It's Chusu Yagen Olena. In the Marganisa de Rabbi Meir, it's a collection of teachings from Rabbi Meir promised Shlana, put together by Reuven Margolius, of all people, for those who know who that is. He says, it's in Parshas Chayisar. Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Basada. Yitzchak went out to Lasuach, to converse in the field, to Davin, Lifnos Arev, was towards evening, and he lifts up his eyes, Vayisa Eina, Vayar, Vihine Gimalim Ba'im. He lifts up his eyes and he sees that there are camels coming. You know who should be really insulted by this pasuk? A beautiful woman named Rivka. Because if he looks up and he doesn't see Rivka, and he sees camels, that's a little insulting. Says Rav Meir from Mishlaner, why doesn't it say that Yitzchak raised his eyes and he saw Rivka coming? He saw camels coming. What's the pshat? So he says the following. Just listen to a couple lines from the tzaddik. Achakavana ki, Yitzchak avinu al vashal. Yitzchak avinu. Yitzchak who is the midah of gvura, midah sadin. We need this vart during the Bein HaMitzar. Yitzchak whose midah sadin was sofa umabit beruach kodesh. He looked into the future with his ruach hakodesh. Midas Hadin looked into the future with Ruach HaKodesh. And he said, what's going to be in the future? Who's going to come from Rivka? And how are they going to bring Mashiach? And you know what he saw? Azra v'hine gimalim ba'im. Lashon gomlim gemilas chasad. He saw that there were camels coming. Yitzchak looked way into the future. Yitzchak was worried. The Gemara says at Shabbos, he's fighting for Klal Yisrael to make sure there's going to be a geula. How's there going to be a geula? Is it our Torah? Is it our tefillah? Yitzchak looks into the future. What does he see? He sees gemalim. He sees gemilas chasadim, which is also, by the way, gematria Torah. It's the essence of Torah. He sees camels coming in the distance. Ba'avoseinu hakadoshim yibitu atzov kol hadoros be'ikus of the Mashiach. They look to the end of days. Asher ba'avonoseinu harabim, because of the weightiness of the gullus, ein Torah va'avoda k'mo b'shanim kadmonios. Our Torah is not what it used to be. Our tefillah is not what it used to be. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks down at Camp Pass. He sees the unbelievable chesed that's taking place here. With Yurin on top of the backs of nuns. And says, V'amech kulam tzadikim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, there's nothing more beautiful in the world. Yeskayim ha'olam bizchus gemilas chasad. And that's what it means, that it was lifnos erev. It was getting late. It was late in world history. It was the end of time. It was moments before Mashiach. And Yitzchak went out. He didn't know how to daven anymore, but just a little hisbonus. Lasuach basada. And he said, please, Klal Yisrael, continue to provide for one another. Continue to carry one another. And then Amir Tzah Hashem, will be zocha this year to greet Geula and Mashiach from Herav Yemei.